Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast and Radio MD, iHeart, or wherever you're listening to us or downloading us from. Thanks very much for doing that, and you feel free to tell your friends and neighbors about us. The A segments are always the latest medical news of the week and what it means to you. The Bs, like this one, 1041B, are great guests, and we have a sensational guest that our producer lined up today, Peter Statz, who is the Chief Medical Officer of the National Spine and Pain Centers, also the Chief Medical Officer of Electro, ELECTRO Core.com, which is really what I hope to talk to him about, vagus nerve stimulation. We always used to say what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. In this case, for your body, what happens in your vagus nerve, we hope doesn't stay in your vagus nerve, in this case anyway. We are brought to you, as usual, by Persona Nutrition. You can discover vitamins and supplements that are just personalized right for you. You can take the free online assessment at mypersona.com. Find out if anything's missing in your diet or not. If you have one of those perfect diets, well, they'll tell you and you don't need anything. And if you don't, they'll be able to find out exactly what you're missing and personalize your supplements just for you. That's at mypersona.com. Peter Statz has a great history and is one of the key people who founded the Division of Pain Medicine at Johns Hopkins University in the Department of Anesthesia, Critical Care, and Pain Management there. And I should ask him how my former faculty member from the Cleveland Clinic did as chair at Hopkins, but she's doing a great job as she's now a dean of a medical school in Florida. In any case, Peter was at Hopkins and is now innovating enough that you've got to call him incredibly busy. Peter, thanks for coming on. He is a physician, as you can tell, and is a exceptional innovator. How did you get involved in vagus nerve stimulation, Peter?
Well, it's, you know, kind of a long history, but I had been president of what's called the Neuromodulation Society, the North American Neuromodulation Society, and had been thinking about how do we control asthma.
So wait a second, Peter, before you get any further, you got to tell us, what is neuromodulation? Although my audience is pretty gosh darn sophisticated, neuromodulation is a term that we need to define for them.
Sure. Neuromodulation is the field of medicine that uses electricity or site-specific drugs to modify disease. And we might all have thought about it with things like spinal cord stimulators, or maybe people have heard of peripheral nerve stimulators, or maybe people have heard of pacemakers, which would be one of the original neuromodulation approaches. But what we do is try to control pain originally with spinal cord stimulation. And I branched off from there and tried to control other diseases by tapping into that other major part of the nervous system called the vagus nerve. So neuromodulation has been around for a long time, but what's a little bit unusual or a little bit innovative would be going to the vagus nerve to control other types of disorders.
So before I get you to tell us about what the vagus nerve does, I've got to tell a story about, do you know how the pacemaker was first, you brought it up as the first neuromodulator, do you know how it was actually invented by Paul Zoll? What caused him to do that?
I knew Earl Bakken on the other side of that, but I don't know the Paul Zoll story.
So Paul Zoll was a cardiologist who was assigned to Britain in World War II, 1944, I believe it was, during the bombing of Britain. And it turned out he was in a church area with another with a surgeon, a cardiac surgeon, and they were part of the American team in Great Britain that was, when people got injured, they came to this area. And it turned out in the foyer of this church, there was a rug on the floor. And for some reason, the Germans bombed this, and they brought a person in with a cardiac wound. Literally, he had shrapnel in his heart and was bleeding out. So the surgeon right there on the foyer of this church opened up and got the heart, took the shrapnel out, and now obviously he was bleeding out. And he said, "Paul, come over here and put your finger here in this hole." And Paul shuffled over, and the shuffling on the rug caused static electricity. When Paul touched the heart, it started beating, and that gave him the idea for the pacemaker, and that was the start of Zoll Medical. At least that's the story he told. That was the first neuromodulation, I think. In any case, talk to us about the vagus nerve, because the vagus nerve is a huge nerve. So tell us where it comes from and where it goes to.
Well, the vagus nerve is one of the cranial nerves. It's actually the longest cranial nerve in the body. And I consider it the command and control center for the body. You have talked, and you've taught me so much about how health and inflammation can control disease. But what is probably not known by a lot of your listeners is that inflammation is in part controlled by the vagus nerve. There are connections of the vagus to the spleen that control the production of all these inflammation mediators out there. So I'm certainly a fan of all the work that you've done with real age and diet and many of those aspects of things. But partly this is physiologically controlled by the vagus nerve. And so that is one area, that's the gastrointestinal system, the spleen, but also the pulmonary tree, the brain, all have great control with activation of the vagus nerve.
So what you've told us so far, as I hear it, and it's important for the listeners, the vagus nerve is the largest nerve, both in width and breadth, but also the longest one. And it innervates things all the way from the brain all the way down to the end of your, at least, GI tract. And it's very important in a lot of disease conditions. At least that's what I've heard so far from you.
Yeah, that's entirely right. You know, and back when I was a resident, and I had mentioned that you were a visiting professor when I was a young doctor at Johns Hopkins. You came to Johns Hopkins and gave a series of lectures, but we've learned so much about what the vagus controls over the last 20 or 30 years now, that this really is a very, very important structure.
I should tell people that neuromodulating, stimulating the vagus nerve, is a lot of what you're talking about. We usually try and quiet it with meditation or calm it. Meaning stop it from signaling, but you've gone the reverse way. Is that right? Or what do you do with the vagus nerve when you do neuromodulation?
Well, we actually stimulate the vagus nerve, and people can think about the vagus and the sympathetic nerves as being the yin and the yang. If you have too much sympathetic activity, that also can cause disease and other types of problems. And we need to balance that out in today's world. So we try to stimulate the parasympathetic nerves, which is the biggest branch, of course, is the vagus nerve, to modify disease. We've done that in a number of areas, and we've started with some FDA approvals that might be of interest in migraine and cluster headache for both acute and prevention. We actually have an FDA emergency use authorization in COVID because of the profound work that we did in early work in asthma and the hypothesis that we could potentially control inflammation. So those are some initial forays into medicine, but our research is going much deeper into post-traumatic stress disorder, Parkinson's disease, gastrointestinal disorders, inflammatory bowel disease, all of the areas that are controlled by the vagus nerve has a potential to get benefit with vagus nerve stimulation.
So when you're stimulating it, are you stimulating the part of the vagus nerve that goes back to the brain, or the part coming from the brain to the various organs? In other words, is it, what I'm asking for the listeners is this input that you're giving on the vagus nerve to the brain, or is it input that ordinarily would go from the brain to the organs?
Well, that's a really deep question. We actually had to do some work to figure some of these things out. But the answer is both. It goes, when we stimulate the vagus nerve in the cervical spine, we have branches that go up to what's called the trigeminal nucleus. And that's just a fancy word for saying that's an area of the brain that controls headaches. And then a lot of other processing occurs at that spot. But it also goes efferently. It goes to the GI tract. It goes to the lungs. It goes to other areas as well. And by stimulating the vagus nerve, we have a little bit of a nonspecific effect. But interestingly, just about of all of the effects that we see are positive. So it's a good thing that we're stimulating in both directions.
Where does this go in our armamentarium? When should someone come to a physician who can use ElectroCore? So the website is electrocore.com. When should a patient go and try and find a physician who can use one of your devices? And what's the risk of it? Is there an electrode implanted? If you have a pacemaker, is it okay? Or are there contraindications to getting this? Tell us what conditions. This is because the vagus is so important in everything from heart rate to breathing capacity to digestion, as you've alluded. It's a huge and key nerve. What conditions do patients have that benefit from this?
Well, today in the United States, we're broadly indicated for types of headache, primary headache disorders like migraine and cluster headache. And so if a patient doesn't really want to be taking drugs or they're not getting relief with, you know, other types of conservative approaches, non-invasive vagus nerve stimulation is a really good option for some patients. And it is a prescription device, and so the patient needs to go to their doctor to discuss this. But it is something that is, in fact, many, many physicians now think is a first-line therapy for these cluster headaches, which has also been called suicide headaches because they're such painful headaches. And importantly, this is not a surgery. And as you know, I was one of the first anesthesiologist surgeons to implant these spinal cord stimulators and do those types of things. But part of our innovation is that we've taken out the need for surgery out of having to stimulate the vagus nerve. It's now all in the hands of the patient and the pen of the prescription of the doctor. So we no longer carry those risks of damaging a nerve or damaging a blood vessel from implanting a device. All of this is non-invasively controlled by the patient. And you asked the question about risks of the therapy. And fortunately, the way that this device was created, we don't get the specific fibers that cause the bradycardia or the slowing of the heart. We don't activate those. So in the thousands of patients who have been treated with our device, we've not seen significant bradycardia occur or slowing of the heart, as you've alluded to. It's really one of a very, very safe approach. The other broad area that might be of interest to some of your listeners is that we actually had one of the first FDA emergency use authorizations for patients with exacerbation of asthma with known or suspected COVID to be used at home or in a healthcare setting. And this was based on largely the work that we had done many, many years ago on asthma, showing that we could open up the breathing, cause a bronchodilation in patients with status asthmaticus in the emergency room. So that aspect, the theoretical aspects that we had submitted at the time about inflammation, prompted the FDA to agree with us that this was something that should be in the hands of people who potentially have COVID.
Now, does anything happen to the GI tract? Do they get diarrhea, constipation, nausea, vomiting? Do they lose weight? Do they gain weight?
Well, you know, generally speaking, no. One of the interesting things, there was a paper just published out of the UK showing that there is a quicker recovery after gastrointestinal surgery. Others have discussed improvement in what's called ileus, or slowing of the gastrointestinal tract. And yet others have shown an improvement in a slowing of the gastrointestinal tract due to diabetes. So there have been improvements denoted in a lot of these. Rarely we see somebody get some nausea with this, but that's really pretty rare.
And tell me, now you said it was in the hand. That implies that it's a device that you can control. Is it on a cell phone, or is it an app? Plus, is there something implanted like an electrode, or is it just all through the surface?
It's everything through the surface. It's a small handheld device, about the size of a small cell phone. And we place a little bit of very specific conducting gel on each of the two metal contacts on this little handheld device, place it up to the neck where the vagus nerve runs. And for your listeners, they can feel their carotid pulse. They'll know where the vagus nerve runs because it runs right next to it. And we turn it on and we turn it up until there's a typical pulling of the lip, and something that we found over time is it demonstrates that this has activated the vagus nerve, and we see a little lip pull, and hold it there for 2 minutes, and that is one dose. Again, one of the great advantages is it's taken the need for surgery away. There is no more surgery. It's like an electronic pill, so to speak.
Then does the patient go home with this little device, or is this just used in the office?
That's a great question. This is a home device, and we recommend that patients use it for both acute care, so when they have a very bad headache that comes on, like a cluster headache or a migraine attack, they use it to abort the attack from happening, but also they use it every day in the morning and at night for prevention, and they can keep the headaches from coming on like they might do with some kinds of pills or other types of things, as a preventive medicine, a preventive approach to keep them from ever coming on.
And how long does it take? Meaning, is it a 2-minute stimulation or a 15-minute?
Yeah. So we have different protocols set up for different disorders, but it's typically 2 minutes repeated at least one time. So it could be 4 minutes there. And you do that 2 to 3 times a day.
We're talking with, and we have been talking with, Dr. Peter Staats, S-T-A-A-T-S, who is the Chief Medical Officer of the National Spine and Pain Centers, but also the Chief Medical Officer of ElectroCore, ElectroCore.com, which has this new device, new for us, not new for use, if you will. And electrocore.com is the website, but obviously used for headaches and potentially a number of other conditions that are being investigated. Peter, I want to thank you for coming on. Anything else I should have asked you?
Boy, there's so much. I hope to come back sometime and carry on this discussion, but this has been a tremendous honor, Dr. Roizen, to get a chance to speak with you, one of the leaders in the whole field of modulation of inflammation. To carry this one step forward was just an honor. Thank you.
The honor is mine. And we, of course, are brought to you by someone I'm honored to represent on the show, Persona Nutrition. If you have a question about supplements or vitamins and want them personalized to you, personalized to your diet, your lifestyle, what's bothering you, they've got it. Simple test at mypersona.com. Mypersona.com. You can take the test, find out if your diet is missing anything, or maybe it isn't missing anything, and you'll get reassured and won't need anything. Or if you're missing something, they'll be able to figure it out. At mypersona.com, you get to talk to a dietitian or nutritionist for free as well at mypersona.com. Dr. Staats, we appreciate your being here. And Caitlin, great engineering as always. This has been 1041B, the guest segment of You, the Owner's Manual podcast with Dr. Mike Roizen. We'll be back next week. No one could have as good a guest next week as we had this week. Peter Statz, thank you very much. I hope you download us and enjoy us too.